All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for a Wednesday. It's February 15th. Hope everybody had a good Valentine's Day. And then we move on through the lesser romantic parts of winter. Is that it? If this was peak romance, I guess that's one way to look at it. Coming up this hour, although the fight continues in capitals and courtrooms, the repeal of Roe v. Wade means that women who need full spectrum, quality health care can no longer get it in Wisconsin. We have an archaic 1849 abortion ban, and it has led to the creation of a new clinic for women willing to cross into Illinois. And we will talk to that clinic's co-founder as part of our occasional visit with former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski, who introduces us to women around Wisconsin, showing a leadership role in their communities in some way, shape, or form. So we're looking forward to that. Coming up tomorrow, we will have Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lyerly. She introduces us to a group that is monitoring the air quality in the Beloit area as part of a public health initiative. We will talk to a Democratic strategist, Joe Zepecki, about Governor Evers' budget address that's coming up tonight. And State Representative Tip McGuire will join us to talk about the governor's budget address as well. If you want to reach the show, 844-967-2789 or 715-388. 7155, and our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron, I tried cooking something new yesterday, and completely on a lark, by the way, and it didn't go exactly as planned, which I guess you can always say the first time that you try to make something. You ever, and this was a soup, it was something called Mexican shell soup. You ever see something on social media or something and go, I would like to make that right now or soon?
Oh, definitely. And sometimes it's because it sounds good, and sometimes it's because it sounds terrible, but not too much effort. Not terrible, but just weird.
It was, coincidentally, I should have mentioned this to Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, but it's a friend of mine in Wisconsin Rapids, and she had put up on Facebook a picture of a pot of soup, something called Mexican shell soup that she had made the night before. And it looks amazing. Looks like a kind of a tomato broth with just macaroni shells in there, just pasta shells. And then some ground beef and some other things. And I thought, that looks really good. And I looked up recipes on the interwebs, and there are different variations of it. And so I thought I would give it a try. I had to run downtown anyway to the post office. I'll stop at the grocery store. So next thing I know, I am slicing up, having tomatoes and onions, and I'm roasting tomatoes and onions, and I'm toasting pasta. I've never toasted pasta before. I'd never heard of it before.
Can't say that I've done that either.
It is. You put some olive oil, you know, in a kettle, because that's what you're eventually going to make the soup in. You put a little bit of olive oil in there, and you just keep stirring the shells and brown them slightly, and that it apparently gives it more of a smoky flavor. I don't know if it did or not, because now we're getting to the crucial error. I took those roasted tomatoes and onions and put them in a blender, and it said liquefy them. And I did, and that's fine. So basically I made the world's mildest salsa. And you add that, and you add some chicken broth, and I browned some ground beef, and I put that in. And like I said, a couple of other things as well. But then the critical mistake was I started working on today's show, started working on my show notes and what have you. And next thing I know, enough time had passed that by the time I got back to the pot, pretty much all the liquid was gone. The shells had absorbed all of the liquid, and they were ginormous. They were just
gosh.
So essentially, I'd made goulash without meaning to, because it no longer qualified as soup. So I had to add some more chicken broth, and of course the shell soaked that up as well. So my attempt to give my wife a Valentine's Day surprise backfired. I won't say spectacularly, because it was still good, but it was nothing. Here's what she said. She looked at it. I showed her the original picture, and she looks at me and she goes, "Nailed it."
Nice.
Have you ever seen that on Netflix? The show Nailed It?
I have not.
Where people try to recreate things, usually food things or desserts or, you know, whatever, and they look horrible. They look awful. They look nothing like the original. But of course, it's a sarcastic thing. Nailed it. Here it is.
Right. And
so I had my own version of nailed it, trying to cook some soup for the first time off a recipe. I'm going to try it again because it's going to be darn good, you know, once I figure it out and get it right. But
yeah,
not this time around.
I guess some recipes, when they say serve immediately, they do mean it.
They do mean it. I learned that about pasta this way. Let's do a little sports here. The Bucks are now up to an 11-game winning streak, beating the Boston Celtics. They needed overtime to do it in Milwaukee last night, 131 to 125. The Bucks went ahead for good when Drew Holiday sank a three-pointer with 25 seconds left in overtime. He matched his career high of 40 points, and he showed why he's heading back to the All-Star game this weekend. The first time he's been to the All-Star game in 10 years, the longest drought in between first and second All-Star game appearances for the NBA. The Badger men's basketball team held off Michigan last night, 64 to 59. The Badgers missed their last 15 shots, but had enough free throws to hang on over the final 10 minutes of the game. The Badgers are home against Rutgers on Saturday. Marquette, ranked 11th in the nation, will host Xavier tonight in another showdown between the two teams who are battling for the top of the Big East Conference standings. And again, even though it's not a sports score, I'm just going to keep saying it because I'm so happy. Spring training is underway this week. The first workout between pitchers and catchers for the Brewers starts tomorrow. And spring training just moves on. We'll have some news headlines coming up next. You're up north. Welcome back. This is Up North News for a Wednesday. Nice to have you along here. Super Bowl ratings are out, and what you had on Sunday was the third most watched television show in history. 113 million people watching, according to final numbers released on Tuesday by Nielsen. That includes the broadcasts on Fox and their Spanish broadcast network, streaming on Fox, and all of the NFL digital sites. You combine them all to see who is watching the game. Still not the highest rated ever. That was the game 8 years ago between the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. That was at 114.5 million viewers, not including streaming. And then the game in 2017, so 6 years ago, between New England and Atlanta, drew just over 113 million viewers. Now, here's the ironic thing. The Super Bowl averaged 113 million people watching. Rihanna's halftime show averaged 118 million viewers, making it the second most watched in Super Bowl history. Only Katy Perry's performance in 2015 topped that at 121 million people. So 118 million people watching Rihanna's halftime show, Aaron, that I know we have not talked about, but we, you know, as I was watching some more of the coverage, you know, yesterday's people were talking about it. A lot of folks thought that Rihanna's baby bump essentially stole the show. It stole some of the thunder from her performance. And I don't know that I necessarily agree. I was still paying attention to the music and the dancing. And I thought, you know, the whole time looking at her going, she might be pregnant, but I didn't think it overshadowed it, but maybe you disagree.
I don't think it overshadowed it either. I think it just made it more impressive that, like, you're watching and you're like, this is a great show. She's also definitely pregnant. So good on her. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that all in all, it worked well, and certainly it had the ratings to show for it. And I think that if those folks who were complaining about it, and there's always conservatives who will complain about these things, we'll see if we can't get the women from The Handmaid's Tale or something to, you know, maybe sing a hymnal, you know, yeah, next time around, if that'll make you happy.
One other interesting fact about that, after I heard that statistic, I looked up the most watched broadcasts in America. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw this, but 29 of the top 30 most watched broadcasts are Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what the other one is?
I'm going to guess the final episode of MASH.
Yep, that's what it is. Number 10.
All right. See, now that was, I suspected as much, although I just didn't know how many other sports broadcasts that had, you know, passed it by this point. And I'll say, you know, we talked in the last hour about things that have staying power. I don't know that I would necessarily sit down and watch it again. I think I've seen clips of it, but it was so powerful. And that one definitely, if you look at things that deserve those ratings, that last episode of MASH is a blockbuster. Again, generational thing. Maybe you've seen it. Maybe you haven't.
I've seen some episodes, but not the last one.
Yeah, and I think it may not mean as much if you're not invested in the show. And obviously, it was a number one show for many years on CBS in the late 70s and early 80s. And they were really one of the first shows that, even despite it having a laugh track, would cross over into these moments of drama, which now we expect from every comedy. Now we expect every comedy to have a very special episode with some drama. MASH was the first. And so you already had high expectations going into the final episode, which I think was 2 hours. And it lived up to the hype. There's just, you know, there's no other way to put it. So and again, fewer choices back then in channels. So of course, when everybody's watching that episode of MASH, or everybody's watching Who Shot JR, you know, on Dallas and all that, of course they get big numbers. The fact that MASH still holds that number just tells you how big it was at its time, that it's now been nothing but Super Bowls for all the years ever since. And again, that's the one thing, it seems, that brings an entire country together. Some for the sports, some for the commercials, some because they're going to somebody's house party, so, you know, it's on anyway. Because too much of what we have nowadays is designed basically to divide us. And that's really what we've got here in our politics, and especially from certain politicians who live for the cynicism. They live for division. They live for mockery. And that takes us to Congressman Derek Van Orden from the 3rd District in Western and Central Wisconsin. Now, early on, after the election, and well, even before the election, but especially after the election, he said he was going, you know, basically said he's going to be a moderate. He's the normal guy. He's your next door neighbor, you know, and you would want to have a beer with this guy. It was clear from his past behavior that's not who he was at all. And for a little while after his swearing in, he again tried to have that, you know, professional demeanor about him. But it didn't take long before his tweets were nothing but, you know, snark. And one of them particularly stood out just ahead of the Super Bowl, when somebody put up a photo, or maybe he took the photo, and it's a photo of vegetarian sausage patties. And it could just as easily have been, you know, veggie burgers or impossible burgers or, you know, whatever you want to call them. But, you know, this is what he puts up. And his tweet says, "Stop the madness. These should be labeled ultra processed vegetarian dirt circles." Vegetarian dirt circles, which, again, that might be funny if you're just some schmuck sitting on a bar stool, which is what Derek Van Orden used to be until recently. It's another thing to call them vegetarian dirt circles when you're a member of Congress representing a ton of farmers whose soybeans have found a market in this fast-growing product. And yet here's your congressman mocking your work. Good job, Congressman. Can't wait to see the follow-up on that. But this is also somebody who managed to politicize an attack on a fellow member of Congress. Angie Craig, Congresswoman from the Twin Cities, was assaulted as part of, I don't know if it was an attempted purse snatching or what it was, but of course, Derek Van Orden could have just said, "Hey, get well soon. Sorry this has happened." He did put up a tweet saying, "I wish a speedy recovery to my colleague from Minnesota," but that was the second line in it. The first line was, "Crime in Democratic-controlled cities is out of control. I wish a speedy recovery to my colleague from Minnesota." And he was talking about Washington, D.C., where this happened. He couldn't be a decent person for one moment without taking some kind of a political shot. And again, we don't spend nearly as much time politicizing all of the crime that's done in rural Wisconsin by people who, you know, are hooked on meth and other drugs there, and, you know, the sexual assaults that go on, and a whole host of other things. But cities, of course, are more concentrated. It's where you see more media stories. Obviously, more people is always going to mean more of anything, more good things, more bad things. And it doesn't help when people like Derek Van Orden, Ron Johnson, and all the rest won't do a damn thing about guns. We're the only country in the world like this. It's not the people. It's not the mental health. It's not the media. It's not the video games. All of these things occur everywhere else in the world. It's the guns. And in some of these quote-unquote democratic-controlled cities, they have passed basic common sense gun safety rules and restrictions so that people, you know, with mental incapacities, proven mental incapacities, have a harder time accessing guns in those cities. But because we've got a contingent elsewhere about the government's coming to take our guns, disclaimer, the government is not coming to take your guns. Because we have that attitude, the guns that are coming into these cities are by and large being acquired elsewhere in places that don't have those safeguards in place. And again, because they are cities with more people, you're going to have more bad things like crime, and you're going to have politicians like Derek Van Orden who want to take advantage of it and can't just wish somebody well when one of their own colleagues is attacked. It's shameful, but it's probably more shameless than anything else. Meanwhile, in the other corner of the state, Green Bay Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher is continuing to get some press for this new committee that he's chairing, the House Select Committee on China. And the latest is, again, a note of how there are signs that this could be a bipartisan committee in a divided House of Representatives. The news reports are talking about how Gallagher's committee, could be something that Democrats and Republicans agree on. And he's getting set to hold his first hearing. Well, even in the run-up to this, I have mentioned before that my concern with this committee is that it's going to be used to basically, you know, inflame tensions with China and undermine any efforts by the Biden administration to make progress without having to engage in saber rattling. And it's not helped at all by Gallagher saying in a news report out today, he's exploring an idea to hold a House hearing that would involve lawmakers participating in a war games scenario of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan. And Gallagher has said previously that he thinks basically that Taiwan should be armed to the teeth to fend off a potential Chinese invasion, which, again, if you're already saying those things, how do you think that's going to go when you start shipping arms to Taiwan? Again, you can either do this through saber rattling and brinksmanship, or you can try to do this through diplomacy and sanctions and what have you. And there may be room for both, but there can only be one government of the United States of America. If we're talking with two voices on international matters, especially matters that could lead to armed conflict, it's not helpful. We've always said in this country that partisan politics, you know, ends at the water's edge and that we be united overseas. Now, that has not been the case in this generation for a host of reasons, not the least of which is George W. Bush starting a war based on false information that he may have concocted, leading to thousands of Americans dead. So there might have been that. So politics is now going to be a part of our foreign policy for some time to come. But maybe we shouldn't try to inflame tensions even before conflicts begin. And that's where I hope the reports are right about Gallagher's committee being bipartisan. I hope they're productive. My sense is that Democrats don't want to be labeled as soft on China. So they're saying all the right things to go along with Gallagher's committee, but keeping a close eye on it and making sure that U.S. diplomacy speaks with a single voice. When we come back, we're going to be joined by former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski and a guest talking about a new clinic in Rockford to give Wisconsin women more healthcare options because of the state's 1849 abortion ban. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday, February 15th. We're going to be talking about healthcare options for Wisconsin women in just a minute here. First, I wanted to remind you that tomorrow on the show, we will have Dr. Kristen Lyerly with our weekly hometown health segment, and she'll be introducing us to a group that is monitoring air quality in Beloit. Find out why that is and what the value is of that so that folks know, if there are any particular issues, with their health. That's in Hometown Health tomorrow. We'll also have State Representative Tip McGuire talking about Governor Evers' budget address, and Joseph Becky and Luke Mathers all on the docket as well. But now we want to take a second for the next few minutes, visit with our friend Sarah Godlewski, who also brought along a guest to talk about women's healthcare options beyond state lines. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. It's so great to be here. I hope you guys all had a good Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Well,
we always are keeping the tradition of heart shaped pizzas in my family. So
okay, all right.
Did
that start with Rocky Rococo by chance, or someplace else?
You know it, Rocky Rococo's heart shaped pizzas and balloons. It doesn't get better than that.
I mean, all of us of a certain age in Wisconsin, It's the heart-shaped Rocky Rococo pizza is a foundation of any good relationship. Let's talk about our guest, Jeannie Bissell from the Rockford Family Planning Foundation. And Sarah, every couple of weeks, introduces us to somebody who's in a leadership role around Wisconsin. In this case, it's about women's health care in Wisconsin with, an archaic abortion ban in place. Sarah, this is something that, again, prior to the repeal of Roe v. Wade, we maybe thought was not going to take up so much of our time, but I imagine it's taken up a lot of your time and the women that you're talking to, Jeannie included, did not ask to be in this position, but are trying to do what they can to make a difference.
Well, the biggest thing that I hear as I'm traveling the state and talking to folks that are, whether they are individuals that now no longer have this right to reproductive freedom, to dads, husbands, partners, they're all worried about this. And we know that we need to start, focusing our political power, because that has not, that has failed us over the last 50 years. But the other big thing that people keep asking me is, what can I start doing today? I mean, women need access to reproductive health care, and they're not able to get that today. And so what can they do and where can they go? And I think what's really frightening is there aren't a lot of options. But Jeannie Bissell, and that's why I'm so excited that she is here today, she was on this even really before the Dobbs decision came down, mm-hmm. because we knew that this was going to likely be our reality, and started thinking about, okay, what can we do to provide care, access to abortion care for women here in Wisconsin? And that's where the Rockford Family Planning Foundation became a reality. And so it's great to have Jeannie here, who can really talk about why she decided to kind of take the reins and develop the Rockford Family Planning Foundation, and kind of what it will do and how it will help support Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Well, good morning, Jeannie. Thanks for being here.
Great.
Tell us more about the lead up to this, which, as Sarah said, you were thinking about these things well before the Dobbs decision, because the threat has always been out there.
Oh, yeah. We knew, all of us activists in South Central Wisconsin knew, that when Amy Barrett was put on the Supreme Court that this was their goal. And they have a basically sort of a fundamentalist Christian agenda, and they have a very specific ideology, and their goal is to impose this ideology on our country. And we knew we had this barbaric law from 1849 that creates a felony for providers who terminate a pregnancy, except in very egregious circumstances where they need to have two physicians sign off on the imminent death of the woman or pregnant person. So we live in a forced birth state right now in Wisconsin. Women are not equal to men under the law. And I have a lot of relationships with people all over the Midwest. And we knew that wait times, even in the spring of 2022, were 3 to 4 weeks in Chicago and in Minnesota as well. We knew that we needed more access for all the patients that would be streaming in to sanctuary states such as Illinois and Minnesota. And we knew that Rockford was a very important area. Data shows that if women have to travel more than 2 or 3 hours, many times because of their own obstacles in their lives, will give up. And we don't want to happen. We want to have people have convenient access, high quality, comprehensive abortion care. And that's when we went about to organize and provide. And you may be saying, why aren't the big players doing this? Well, all the big players, quite frankly, when it came to June 24th, were very overwhelmed. Everybody was boots on the ground trying to do what they can. And we happen to have some very driven activists, philanthropists, and organizers, a bunch of ladies that all got together. And if you piss a bunch of ladies off, they will go into work. And so we put it all together, and we're doing a really good job. Heather Coburn has been absolutely instrumental in the foundational development of our organization. We have excellent doctors that will be coming down, and it's going to be a beautiful center in about 3 or 4 months.
Well, as soon as you mentioned Heather Colburn, then I know this thing is on solid footing. I'm familiar with her and how dedicated she is towards something. And I'm glad you brought up the foundational aspect of this, because a lot of us did not know until after the Dobbs decision that there had been historically that there were funds available to help women access healthcare in areas where it was extremely limited. And some of those folks are, since the Dobbs decision, have said we want to do more to get the word out about that, to gain support, but more importantly, to let women know that these funds exist to help them to travel to other states or to access care, or, you know, in this case, to help with what you're doing in Rockford. It just goes to show what I've said at the beginning of the show. The fight goes on in courthouses, it goes on in capitals, but there's a lot that's happening behind the scenes as well to help women, Jeannie.
Absolutely. There's the Wisconsin Medical Fund, and then there's the Chicago Abortion Fund, which will help patients coming from Chicago. And we have very good relationships. They're already providing a certain amount of funds. We need to raise about another million for our Rockford Family Planning Foundation, because we want to have our own justice fund. We won't turn anybody away, even if I have to. We'll just take care of everybody. Yes, we will find a way.
Which, Sarah, is, again, that's something that almost every woman, and we hear this all the time. We hear it from Dr. Kristen Lilley and others, that so many women in a position to require abortion care didn't expect that to happen. That was not part of their plan, whether it was an intentional pregnancy or an unintended pregnancy, and that we have to continue to hack away at this myth that abortions are some kind of you know, a substitute for birth control, matter of convenience, willy-nilly decision that so many people think women are just making on a lark, when that is not at all the full story on abortion care.
Well, and I think we can't emphasize this enough, Pat. I mean, I was recently talking to a woman. She is now 20 plus weeks pregnant. And she found out that what is now her fetus is actually has a genetic disorder that actually it won't live very long at all. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to figure out, what do I do? Because I can't get that kind of care here in Wisconsin. She's on a limited fixed income. She can't really travel. And so in having these conversations, she's like, this, you know, there's no real, like there's no medical viability in this situation. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the doctors are saying it could become dangerous for her. And so these aren't, like, we know these people. These are our neighbors, our friends, our colleagues that are dealing with these challenges. And, you know, and even like, I was talking to another woman recently, and they were hoping to have another child, and she's older. And she goes, I don't know if I'm a high risk potential mom. And what would happen if I had something here in Wisconsin, and I couldn't find the three doctors necessary to provide the emergency care? And so I think that this is really, it's front and center. People are thinking about it, whether they are wanting to start a business here or grow their families. And it is critical for us to be realistic about these issues, because we know Minnesota is addressing this. We know Illinois is, and Wisconsin needs to be there to provide these fundamental rights. And that's why I'm so grateful that Jeannie has really taken this and said, you know what, I'm not going to wait for the laws to change, because lives are at stake, and has really stepped forth in developing this clinic on the Wisconsin-Illinois border that is really close and convenient to people in the state of Wisconsin, because right now that will soon be a realistic option.
Jeannie, you have to feel that this is going to make a real difference in an environment where right now women have to wait until their fever hits a certain level, or they lose a certain amount of blood before they can get care. There's going to be direct positive impacts on women's lives as a result of what you're doing.
Yes, we'll be providing really top tier, nationally recognized physicians. We'll be providing up to 23 weeks, and we will also be doing MedAB. I'd like to add that some of our friends have started a small MedAB clinic, which is mifepristone and misoprostol, in Rockford. And Wisconsin women are filling up those appointments. They're filled every single day already, and they've only been open a few weeks. So there is a demand. We're seeing the demand. We're helping women already, but we can't wait to be open to give that full service up to 23 weeks. Because yes, miscarriage management, ectopic pregnancies, fatal fetal anomalies, microencephaly, all these things are happening in our UW hospitals right now. And because of the stigma of abortion care, and it's heartbreaking. So everybody's scrambling to get all patients down to Waukegan, up to Bloomington, up to St. Paul to get the care that they need. But why? Why should they have to do that?
Exactly.
And we have a primary in just a few days, and you know, I'm terrified.
Yeah, I think that's what we have time for. Just that one more point, Sarah, and I'll leave that one to you. The importance of people voting 6 days from now. Why does it matter?
I mean, abortion's on the ballot. We know right now that how do we remove the archaic 1849 law? It's through the justice system. And there is a lawsuit right now questioning this archaic law that's going to eventually be heard by the Supreme Court. And we need a majority of progressive justices to say, absolutely, this is archaic, and this is not what the law intended. And women do have the right to choose. So that is on the ballot.
It most certainly is. And again, for folks that want more information about absentee balloting, although it's getting a little late for that now, so where's your polling place? Are you registered to vote? All of that you can find at myvote.wi.gov. Again, there are four candidates on the ballot, two conservative, two progressive. The top two vote getters next week move on to April with no guarantee that it will be either of the progressives without a healthy voter turnout next week. Jeannie Bissell, Sarah Godlewski, thank you so much for the discussion. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks for having us, Pat.
Thank you very much. Could I just say, could folks go to our website, rockfordfamilyplanning.org?
Very good. Rockfordfamilyplanning.org. Got it. All right. Back with Todd Alba next. You're up north. Right. If you're watching us on Facebook or Twitter, you can see that coming up tomorrow, we'll have our usual Thursday load of guests, Joe Zepecki and Dr. Kristen Lierley. Joe Zepecki will talk to us about the governor's budget address tonight, and Kristen Lierley will be talking about monitoring air quality in Wisconsin communities. And then on Friday, he says, advancing the graphic, for those of you watching the video version of this, Kia Vakil from Courier Newsroom will join us on Friday morning, as will Dan Schumacher, as will Mark Jacob, former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. That's all yet to come this week on Up North News Radio. But for now, Todd Alba joins us from the Todd Alba Show, it says here. Yes, that what a nice coincidence that is.
How about that?
Joins us from the Civic Media, you're the heart of Civic Media there. Which of you is in the left ventricle? Which of you is in the aorta, where
I'm
you're
in
somewhere
aorta.
In the beating heart that is Civic Media.
I am the aortic valve.
I'm the pig aorta that got stuck in here by mistake. that's what I am.
Wow, okay. Well, I guess that just makes me the load of bacon grease that's in that aorta that requires the valve to be fixed. Mr. Alba, you have a big show today. You have what we in the business call a get.
We're fortunate, very fortunate through a relationship with Trygve Olson, who's normally on our show every Wednesday. He is a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, but unfortunately, I should say, in our case, probably fortunately, he couldn't make it today. So he got his replacement. He picked his own replacement, and we have Rick Wilson, who is the founder of the Lincoln Project, the guy himself who started all this, a national figure. So he will be in today and talk a little bit about why he left the Republican Party and his journey, and then what led him to help co-found the Lincoln Project, what exactly they do, and then his take on things like Nikki Haley getting in today into the presidential race, and also Trump and how that affects Wisconsin. Is Wisconsin what are they seeing nationally? Is Wisconsin still going to be ground zero? And who knows? All other kinds of war stories from two former Republicans on the redemption tour.
I was going to say, so it's fair to refer to Rick Wilson as the Todd Alba of the national scene.
That is doing him a disservice. But
or is he he's the Dale Schultz of, wait a minute, let's put it this way. He's the Dale Schultz of Todd Albas. Something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Now I've confused myself. But in all cases, it is fitting with the conversations that I constantly have and so many other people do that now begin with these words: I'm a Republican, but, and then it's something about Trump or it's something about extremism or what have you. And as I've said before, I miss the Republican Party of long ago that actually wanted to work on policy, and you had policy disagreements. You weren't trying to turn people into others and monsters and all the things that sadly we were talking earlier today about how Sarah Huckabee Sanders's response to the State of the Union address was not meant to appeal to middle America. It was meant to keep the base tight, because they know that through gerrymandering and the Electoral College and everything else, you no longer have to have a majority support in this country to govern.
I was listening this morning. I thought that was a really good point, a really good discussion. And you're right. And too many Republicans out there, I think, have this, in my opinion, I don't want to call it a fantasy, but they're just misguided in that they long, you're exactly right, Pat, they long for the days of 20, 30 years ago's Republican Party where you could have civil discussions and you could, everybody agreed on things like, we have to educate our kids. Maybe we could argue on how you do that, but there's no argument back then about we have to do something to educate our kids. We have to fix our roads. We have to get along. We have to make democracy work. And that's one of the things I'm going to ask Rick about today on the show. He's famous and kind of gets some pushback a lot for using the phrase, burn it down. I mean, and we have to say these days and times, figuratively speaking, but the Republican right. Party, burn it down. And so I'm going to have him explain what he means by that, and I'll let him speak for himself. But from my perspective, you look at it and you say, is this even worth or has they have the ability to save it? Because it's so infested by people like Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
It is. And it's fair to ask, because if you take either party and you let the extremists rule the roost, you know, as Democrats did about, you know, little more than 100 years ago, you know, up until, you know, 70 years ago, and now Republicans today, the extremists eventually run the party where their view, their very warped view, becomes the mainstream of that party, where, like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, they make ridiculous statements like this one.
The dividing line in America is no longer between right or left. The choice is between normal or crazy.
We know, Sarah. We know.
Yeah, that was, if you don't know crazy, you just heard it. I mean, that's really what it is right there. But it's sad. It's sad, right, Pat, that we've come to this point where they've current Republican Party, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders is a prime example, that they've let this Christian white nationalism creep into the party. Well, it's always been there, but they've just let it overtake it. And now we get into religious wars and all this sort of thing. And there's not a whole lot of turning back from that. And so Rick Wilson today on our show is going to talk about how do we basically, figuratively speaking, burn down the iteration of the Republican Party that is and move on to something different. Because, I was listening to you this morning and you making the point, whether it's Nikki Haley or whether it's Lindsey Graham, go right down the list of these people that disavow them, Marco Rubio, disavow themselves from Trump.
Scott Walker, but then when he's the nominee,
we'll bow down to you. You know.
Right. It is the tolerance for things that should be intolerable. And for Trump, it started with, you know, denigrating John McCain. Oh, I prefer people who didn't get caught when he was a draft dodger, Donald Trump was. And yet people appealed to that. And
he had bone spurs, Pat. Come on.
I know. Yeah. Good old Captain Bone Spurs. There was that. There was the Access Hollywood tape should have been. But again, so many people now see it as a blood sport instead of public service that, hey, if that's my guy, it's my guy, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. It's where I really got into that dust up last week with a caller, a polite dust up, but still, you know, somebody that said, well, you know, I'm being too harsh on Franklin Graham. But, you know, for a pastor of his stature to praise Obama as, well, we sometimes need, or praise Trump as, oh, sometimes we need, you know, flawed people, while questioning Barack Obama's Christianity, again, kind of says it all as to what has taken hold and what, whether Rick Wilson or anybody else can root that out. The premise is right. You're better off trying to root it out than to try a third party, because the history of third parties in this country just isn't good.
You bring up a really important point, Pat, and it's this, that I think we as former Republicans and those trying to root this thing out, you have to allow the electorate a way back. You can't just say to 50% of the people in this country, we don't want you to vote. But then we're as bad as the other side, right? Yeah. So I think that, to your point, there are a lot of folks that listen to us where you and I are from, in Western and rural Wisconsin and Northern Wisconsin. I know your show is across the state, but a lot of rural folks especially, you know, they watch Billy Graham crusades for years, and they have admiration for Franklin Graham. And so it's not like we're making fun of them. It's like, hey, don't let these people fool you, because here's the truth.
Exactly.
Here's the truth about these people. And you have to allow people a way back and say, once you get educated, then come on back.
Don't get fooled. Todd Alba's next in Richland Center, Wausau, and Amory along the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller next in Madison. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great one.